Scott Weinberg is a veteran film critic. Steven DeGennaro is a doctor of astrophysics. Listen in as these two nerds compare and contrast two noteworthy sci-fi films every week. They'll discuss the artistic quality of the films, whether they get the science right, and whether or not that even matters. Welcome to Science vs. Fiction.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Science vs. Fiction, the podcast where a film critic and an astrophysicist discuss two science fiction films in the realms of entertainment value and scientific intelligence. And my co-host, my giggling co-host, is Dr. Steven DeGennaro. Steven, what's so funny?
I don't think there's any intelligence to be found in either of these movies, scientific or otherwise.
Yes. As you probably could tell by now, if you have downloaded this episode, Steven and I have decided to, in honor of the Halloween season, we have decided to look at two very goofball horror sci-fi comedies.
Where horror and comedy and sci-fi are all in scare quotes.
Well, I mean, come on. You know, like, love these movies or hate them, Steven. You can't say that either of them takes themselves all that seriously.
No.
Okay, so Steven wanted to start with 2001's Jason X, the 10th, Steven, that's where the X comes from.
No.
It's the 10th Friday the 13th movie. How many Friday the 13th have you seen?
All of them.
Okay, and just generally speaking, without getting too specific, where would you rank Jason X on the grand scale of Friday the 13th features?
So how many of them are there? There's, 12, including the remake?
Well, after this was Freddy versus Jason, and then the remake, yeah.
So 12 total. 14? This is about number 14?
Oh, you hated it that much. Wow. Okay.
No, I mean, honestly, it's probably a little bit better than Freddy versus Jason. But that's about it.
I agree. It is better.
Maybe better than 5?
It is better than 5. It's better than 8.
I like 8. I'm one of the few people.
I actually really dig Jason X, spoiling it now, but I dig this movie, but I'm really curious to hear what you think of it. I mean, if the marching orders were, hey, all right, we're at movie number 10 and we're going to do something silly like send Jason into space, I think that this movie gets that silly tone mostly right. So let's start. Okay, we have a prologue in which Jason is frozen cryogenically, and we have a funny cameo here by director David Cronenberg.
Which, the budget for this thing felt like it was about $15. So unless 14 of that went to him, I don't really understand why he chose to involve himself in it.
Why not? If somebody wanted me to do, 4 lines in a horror sequel, I would probably do it. And I remember reading many years ago that Cronenberg was a friend of one of the producers or something. I wish I'd looked it up, but I don't remember. Somebody's going to have to let us know exactly how Cronenberg got involved.
Or he was being blackmailed.
Yes, blackmail is definitely possible.
There was a tape of him peeing on hookers in Russia or something. I don't know.
So, yeah, after Jason goes to hell, the final Friday, which I think is terrible. I think it's just a bad idea to begin with and bad production, bad all the way through.
Although first one I saw in the theater, and I saw it with a crowd that really, really appreciated it. And so it was an experience to watch that, to be able to get to see. In fact, I think it's the only one I saw in the theater. And, I was, 13 years old or something like that when it came out. So it was maybe I was a little older, but...
Steven, could you imagine turning on Jason X and not having seen any of the Friday the 13th movies and just trying to...
Does it matter? Do you ever have to see any of the Friday the 13th movies in order to see any of the other ones? I mean, Jason gets brought back to life. He kills a bunch of people. He gets killed again. Like, it's not like there's some massive amount of continuity. There's somewhat of an arc in 4, 5, and 6-ish, I suppose. But if you exist in America for sure, then you are familiar with the character and you get the MO, which is Jason goes around killing people. And I don't think honestly that it matters in this one because I don't think that they, because we end the last one with him getting dragged down into hell by Freddy Krueger or whatever.
Yep.
And then this one's just like, he's still alive. Like, we're just going to pretend that they've caught him somewhere. We're not going to care.
Hey, you know what though? I will at least Jason X spends a good 5-7 minutes explaining how Jason got into outer space, unlike our next movie, but whatever.
we'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah.
But no, the continuity of this doesn't matter. So no, I think you could probably just watch this entirely standalone and you wouldn't really have lost anything.
All right. So basically what the plan is that they've divulged what I consider a relatively compelling idea in the Jason pantheon. And that is that he has been found to be unkillable, like biologically unkillable. And so this scientist wants to study him, whereas he's been cryogenically frozen because he can't be killed.
Yeah, but if you can't be killed by like fire or machetes or he gets blown up by hand grenades, I think, and Jason goes to hell. Like if you can't be killed by any of that stuff, then what makes you think that you can be cryogenically frozen and that'll take? Like why can't Jason just... Once they freeze him, what makes them think that he's just going to stay frozen?
Yeah.
He's obviously got some weird supernatural ability.
It raises a lot of questions, is what you're saying. Because if he can't be killed, what would happen if you were to cut his body into 6 parts and move them to 6 different parts of the globe?
Exactly. Or you shot him into the center of the sun. Like, what happens then? Like,
Would each body part grow an extra Jason? Or would they kind of...
Would they find each other and meet up?
Right, like Iron Giant style? Like, what would it be, you know? But I think that's fun. And then basically what happens is the young scientist who insists that he's too dangerous to be transported or studied, they don't listen to her. He comes to life, kills everybody except this one girl who was smart enough to know you don't mess with Jason. And then Jason and our heroine are then brought back from cryogenic stasis in the year 2445. Which is about, 500-some years from now. And they are discovered by a scientific vessel? Question mark?
Who knows what the fuck vessel? So this is one of my things in my notes. This vessel makes no sense whatsoever. It's maybe a scientific vessel, but if it is, it's got one scientist and a bunch of horny graduate students. And then for some reason, there's like 8 or 10 military guys on board, but it's piloted by these two like space trucker redneck guys with mullets. And nothing about this ship makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, and later he tells the space station that it's like a private like catamaran type spaceship. So it's like a yacht. In a way.
No,
so it's like, yeah, it's a yacht full of exchange students and military. I don't know. It literally makes no sense. No. It could have just been like Outer Space Love Boat. It would have made just as much sense.
Yeah. See, this gets at one of the things that I just don't like about this movie. And, you know, you know me well enough to know that I hate when people use the term lazy in film criticism. But this feels like the kind of thing, and there's a number of examples I'm sure I'm going to point out as well. It feels like this thing, you know, they were told, okay, here's the premise. And then they went on like a 12-hour Coke binge overnight and shat out this script. And that's what they decided to shoot. Like, and this typifies that because it makes no sense. They don't even bother to like come up with some reason, which, you know, Leprechaun, at least the ship and the contingent of people that are on board that ship makes sense within the world of the story of Leprechaun, as ridiculous as it is. Whereas in this thing, it's just... What? It's just, okay, well, we need some young, horny students and we need some military people because we need a body count in the middle third of the film. So let's just kind of throw it all together.
I will give you that the cast of characters and the design or the definition of the vessel itself is muddy and murkish and confusing. However, I do think that there is a good deal of clever stuff in this screenplay, and it's not just because it was written by a personal friend of mine, Steven. But it's true. I have become friendly with writer Todd Farmer over the years, and I doubt that there's any criticism of this movie that he hasn't heard. I can criticize it as well, but I also think it has some funny stuff in it. But I will give you that. I don't get the ship. I don't get it. Is it a high school? Is it a military vessel? What is it? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
All right, but Stephen, what can you tell our listeners about the state of cryogenics at this point? And could you and I, say, be frozen together and then woken up in 500 years?
No. I mean, as of right now, from our understanding of anything, we could not. And the reason why not is because water is one of the very few substances that we know of that actually expands as it gets colder and as it freezes in particular, which is why ice floats, because you have the same amount of ice, but it takes up a little bit more space And so it floats to the top of your glass or to the top of a lake, which is why ice forms on the top of a lake, which is why, I mean, in a large part, life exists because water has this property. But also because water has this property, if you take a cell and you freeze that cell, all of the water in the cell, which is mostly what it's made up of is water, expands and it will rupture the cell. And so when you freeze something, generally speaking, we haven't really developed techniques to counteract this yet, but when you freeze a living thing, it will oftentimes rupture the cells of that thing. It's, for instance, one of the reasons why if you've ever made French fries, if you freeze them first and then fry them like McDonald's does, they're fluffier because the freezing process itself actually bursts a lot of the starches in the potato, and so you end up with fluffier French fries if you do that. So basically, I'm saying that, you know, this woman would be a big puffy French fry. And no, you would not be able to revive her. And if you were able to revive her, she wouldn't just like look like she just stepped out of the pages of a Victoria's Secret catalog with perfect hair and makeup. And
she doesn't miss a beat cognitively either.
Yeah. No,
she's woken up after 500 years and she's like in the middle of a sentence, like, so where is he? It's like, yeah. Really? You wouldn't need some time.
And she doesn't even get like controlled frozen, right? She gets frozen accidentally because the cryogenic stuff like leaks out into. So literally, she just froze to death. She got hypothermia, and then was frozen solid. As far as I know, because the problems come in during the freezing process, I don't know that there's a way that like, oh, well, you could say, well, you could freeze you now, and then maybe we'll have technology 500 years in the future. Well, it's hard to imagine a technology that could put your cells back together again.
Right. What you're saying is we would need to have the technology now,
right,
that would prevent water from expanding when it freezes. That's the technology we'd need today,
yeah,
to freeze you and wake you up in 500 years.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. I have a question for you, Scott.
Yeah.
Film criticism question.
Yep.
Can you name any of the characters in this movie?
Janessa, KM. That's it.
Yeah, Janessa. Exactly.
They say Janessa's name a lot. Can you name any of the characters from any of the Friday the 13th movies?
While I was watching the movie, I couldn't name any of the characters in this movie. Like, I did. Most of them were so disposable that they didn't even bother giving them names. Like,
yeah, no, you're right. There's like a central core of like three or four of them, and they're really weirdly obnoxious teacher who looks a lot like Andy Richter. And then there's like, whenever the movie feels like it needs a few kills, it's like, oh, who's that kid? Yeah. He's dead. Oh, yeah. Didn't see him, I guess.
But even the characters that we ostensibly sort of know, there's like the dorky kid who gets his arm cut off. Don't know his name. Didn't know his name while I was watching the movie.
Asriel.
Oh, you're looking at IMDb. That's not fair.
No, I'm not, honestly, but because I rewatched it last night and they say his name.
It's just.
Not looking. I'm not.
No. Jason. Jason. I could name Jason, and you're right. I could do KM because it's what? Knowledge machine or something like that?
The robot, right. The robot's name is KM, and Janessa because they say it 100,000 times.
Yeah.
Okay, so like, what's your take on the robot? What's your take on the robot, KM?
Lady Data. I mean, you know, she's a robot. She's in keeping with Friday the 13th, I guess. She's supposed to be a knowledge bot, or, you know, I think her KM stands for knowledge machine or something like that. But she's also a sex bot, apparently, because she falls in love with the guy that created her, which, I don't know, there's some creepy Oedipal stuff wrapped up in that.
Very creepy.
You know, that's not
– very creepy. Yeah.
And she has her moment to shine towards the end of the movie. I will give it that. Like, the movie made good use of her ultimately. It realized that, okay, if you're going to have Jason and you're going to have an android, you're going to have them square off against one another. And she's going to have some badass moments. And she does at the end of the movie. And so that was good.
So, yeah. So Jason is now loose on board a ship with a bunch of horny, I guess, space college kids and a handful of military guys. The obnoxious professor, and it is kind of like Interstellar Love Boat.
And the truck drivers.
And then now this, to me, is the middle section is where it just becomes kind of dumb.
Yeah. Well, so...
I like the setup a lot, and I do like some of the stuff in the end, but this the everybody running through the ship. And I think it might be a problem with the director, but it honestly feels like what Mr. Farmer was going for here was like in Event Horizon or Sunshine, an ongoing escalation of events that like the dominoes are falling. And you could see it a few times throughout the movie where,
yeah, but then,
where it's like, oh, we have to get to point D, and they do, and that's not, you know, and I can kind of feel this.
Well, so there's a whole middle stretch there where, like, where that's not even happening, though. I mean, the point is like, they introduce a bunch of these Marine guys just to kill them off in, frankly, some of the most unimaginative ways in any Friday the 13th, let alone one that's set in space. Like, there are, you know, obviously the kill that everybody thinks about when they think about this movie is the woman getting her face frozen in liquid nitrogen. And we can talk about the science about that of that in a second.
Yep.
When I get off my soapbox. But there's that one, and then there's the person getting sucked out into space, which they don't even show.
No.
They cut away from it.
Yep.
And those are the only two that make use in any way whatsoever of the space or the spaceship as a place where he's killing things. Like 90% of the people he kills with his machete, or he snaps their neck. And again, they're not even interesting by Friday the 13th standards, where like the guy walking on his hands and he cuts down the middle of his legs with the machete. Like that's, you know, from part three, I think that
yep.
is. And it's like, how could you set a Jason movie in space and then not have like all of the kills or most of the kills be some sort of space related something or other? Instead, they're all just like, there's a corkscrew one, I guess, was kind of neat too. But aside from those three, it's just him literally just chopping people's heads off with a machete. And it's like, why set it in space at that point then?
Yeah, no, I think it's – I wouldn't be surprised, for example, like you said, the one where the girl gets sucked out of the hole in the ship. I got the impression that that was going to be much more elaborate and they had to lose the whole thing.
And they ran out of money.
Either they ran out of money or it was too gory and they had to cut it, or they couldn't figure out how to do it, so they cut around it. And it's such a clunky moment in the film too, because she screams. She has a terrible...
It goes on forever.
She has a terrible sign-off line, and then they just cut to the shot of the hole with a little bit of meat on it.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, yeah. What? She got sucked out of that hole?
And it's a tiny little hole with a grate in it that's like half an inch in between the slats. And so like, okay, so scientifically speaking, as long as we're going to be a sci-fi podcast, let's talk a little bit about explosive decompression.
Okay, let's do it.
So it's called explosive decompression for a reason, because it's explosive. Scott, when you think of an explosive, when you hear the word explosive, what's the first thing you think of?
Dynamite.
Right. Do you think fast or slow?
Fast.
Yes, because it's fast. It's called explosive decompression because it's fast. All right. If you blew a hole in the side of a spaceship, all of the air would get sucked out almost immediately. And to be fair, almost every sci-fi movie gets this wrong. Aliens gets it wrong. Unless there was a continual source of air replenishing the air in that room, it would get sucked out very, very quickly. It wouldn't suck objects towards it, except ones that were very, very close to it. It wouldn't be this big swirling maelstrom like, oh, hang on to a railing or you're going to get pulled out. That's just not how it works at all. Like, you can get thrown out. People get thrown out of airplanes during explosive decompression. But again, it happens really, really quickly. It goes boom and they get sucked out the hole. And, you know, it's got to be a hole that's big enough for them to get sucked out of. You can't get sucked out of a hole that's smaller than your body, because basically once your body gets into that hole, you'd be plugging the hole and then, you know.
I don't understand. what did the pull of gravity do to her bones?
Yeah. I don't know. It really is. Like, you could have shown, again, I don't know about their budget or what constraints they were under in that regard, but like, they could have shown her get sucked out of space and then explode in space, you know, or something gory and cool like that, but they don't. So,
all right. So then if we're in that ship and a hole that size gets blown in the hull, what happens to her for real?
All the air gets sucked out and she suffocates. Basically the same thing that when we talked about in the Event Horizon episode where the kid gets, you know, is in that decompression thing. Like, for him, it happens slowly because they're kind of slowly pumping the air out of the thing. But if it happened quickly, all of the air would move out of the thing in relatively quick amount of time. And then there'd be no air. And it'd basically just like being out in space.
Right.
And your body would, you know, you'd get a giant hickey and your lungs would explode if they had any air in them and you'd die. Or you'd suffocate if you expelled all the air out of your lungs. But you wouldn't get sucked out.
All right, well, we did jump ahead. And we do want to talk about one of the most noteworthy moments in this film.
Yeah.
It's when a lovely doctor who's studying Jason and just does the whole, I can't stand the whole, is it moved? Did it move? Let me turn around and look. No, it didn't.
Yeah.
And then it's like, that to me is very perfunctory and very dull. And then he grabs her by the back of the head, dunks her face in a sink full of liquid nitrogen, and it freezes. We see it in the sink. Her face kind of freezes. And then he smashes it open like a pinata full of glass. Steven, how would this actually go down?
Sort of like that, except it would not happen anywhere nearly that quickly. Now, to be fair, that might not be liquid nitrogen. It could be liquid helium. It could be liquid anything, really. Any you know, it could be liquid oxygen. There's a lot of things that it could be that are significantly colder than liquid nitrogen. But even if you assume that it's something like liquid helium, which I believe is only a couple degrees above absolute zero, it would take a while for your face to lose all of the heat in it. Like, you can pour liquid nitrogen on your hands, and it's not going to hurt you right away.
Right.
It has to have some time to really – and in fact, actually, you can pour liquid nitrogen on your hands, and you're probably mostly okay, because if you poured it on you, a layer of gaseous nitrogen would form in between your hand and the liquid nitrogen that would protect you from a lot of the cold. So you can handle liquid nitrogen. It's not – you know – but obviously, this is how we freeze dry things. So you can stick a hot dog in liquid nitrogen, and after, you know, 30 seconds, minute, you can take it out and it's frozen solid and you can smash it on things. But it wouldn't happen in 0.3 seconds, which is what happens. But, you know, it's a cool visual. And again, there's a reason why this is the only kill people remember from this movie.
So, but my thought was that if her face got like frozen solid like that, and then he smashed it down on the counter, it wouldn't shatter like that. It would just – wouldn't it just make a big dent?
It depends on how hard he hit her. I mean, you can take a hot dog. These people – you can go look it up on YouTube. There's videos of people dipping things in liquid nitrogen and then smashing them. And, yeah, they can smash into lots of different pieces.
I also appreciated how her brain was apparently frozen into, like, green little marbles. It just it makes no medical sense whatsoever, but visually it's a neat sequence. But you do raise a good point in that while I am a fan of much of this movie – I think you make a fair point that a lot of the kills are kind of non-creative. They're not very creative. They're kind of
perfunctory.
Yeah, trying to drab for a movie that is wearing, for a large part of it, is wearing the silliness on its sleeve. It feels like, why would so many of your kills be? And of course, the film has a typical 2001-ish obsession with early digital effects.
Yeah.
We have a holodeck sequence.
So let's talk about the holodeck sequence from a scientific point of view as well as a narrative one.
Okay.
Because this is another one that, like, I think was a stab at least in the right direction of, like, okay, well, let's use the setting to do some things we couldn't do in a normal Friday the 13th movie.
Well, yeah, they set up our buddy Todd Farmer, the writer, plays that big, bald military
guy. So, yeah,
the soldier.
Yeah. Is he military? I don't know. Yeah. We don't know.
Secure. Let's call him security.
We literally, this is the first and only time we see him, so I have no idea what his role is on the ship. I don't know what his name is. I don't know anything about him. He just appears and then...
And him and the kid who got his arm chopped off and then glued back on and then dies soon... they're in the virtual reality thing, just kind of establishing, I guess, for the viewer that they have this holodeck technology
right
on this ship. So that later, when it comes back into another sequence that I think a lot of Friday the 13th fans really enjoy, even though it's satire on the simplest level. I mean, it is
yeah.
It is basically just two pretty young women come to Jason and say, oh, we want to have premarital sex and let's smoke weed, wink, wink. And that's yeah. Like the joke is that now Jason's going to kill them, but
right.
They're virtual constructs. They're not real women. And
right.
But
except we've spent the entire movie establishing that Jason will kill anybody that comes into his path. So like they didn't really need to, I mean, they could have lured him in there with anybody. I guess it sweetened the pot a little bit that they were horny camp counselors or I don't know. But it's not like he kills all the military guys and we don't see them have sex or smoke weed at any point. He just kills everybody. It's Jason's thing at this point. So,
all right. So what's your take on the virtual reality? Would virtual reality actually trick Jason, Steven?
Well, so here's the virtual reality as portrayed in this movie doesn't make any sense because we open with these two guys and they're in this sort of arena and they're apparently hunting things and they come across this alien monster and they go to kill it and Jason is standing behind it. And so we think, okay, well, they're in some sort of a holodeck and the monster is obviously some sort of a projection, but Jason is real behind them. But then Jason walks up to them and he cuts one of their heads off. I think it's Todd Farmer's head off and he slices the other guy down the shoulder and they're both like, uh-oh, I guess we lost the game. And then it cuts to them taking off.
Right, and that makes you think, what, did Jason put the machine on?
Right.
In order for that to happen, Jason would have to be wearing the virtual reality system.
Right. They're wearing virtual reality headsets and sitting in the middle of this room with virtual reality headsets. And it's like, wait a second, is this a holodeck where they're walking through it and interacting with things that are in the room? Or is it a fucking virtual reality thing where they're sitting down and they're looking through goggles and pretending that they're walking around through
it? Right. And more importantly,
what is Jason?
Where is Jason in relation to all this? Is he in the room?
No. Yeah. So, yeah, then they take the headsets off and they look and Jason is standing there in the room and then he kills them for real. But it doesn't make any sense. And it's not even like, okay, this doesn't make scientific sense. That like doesn't even like make the barest minimum of logical sense. It really just does feel like a cocaine fever dream of a script idea that never really got fully thought through.
All right. Other things that I think fans like myself appreciate in this movie is the bit in Act Two where Jason inadvertently but definitely causes the death of countless people having the space station their spaceship crash through a massive space station.
That was a good moment. It was a good twist. I remember watching this the first time and going, okay, I did not see that coming, and that was very funny. I approve of that moment wholeheartedly.
See, that's the thing. I think that like there is a lot of downtime and a lot of what the hell in this movie, but I think that there are just enough clever and fan service tentpole little moments like
right.
that.
Right. Well, so I guess my question then is like – again, there's that middle 20 minutes after they've woken up and Jason has woken up and he's started killing. But until the moment where like the whole team sort of is holed up in the bridge
and the fighting with the robot, there's that whole
cat and mouse thing with the soldiers, which is just entirely unnecessary because the kills aren't interesting. It doesn't really forward the plot in any way whatsoever. It really just feels like, okay, we need a higher body count.
And a running time. We need to fill 15 minutes, you know, like literally that's it.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like a thing that was shot
later.
Like later. They're like, oh crap, the movie's only 70 minutes long. We need to add another 15 minutes. Let's introduce a bunch of characters we haven't seen before and then kill them off. We have to do it for, you know, $300, including catering.
Right. So. No, that wouldn't surprise me because that's the thing. I think the movie on a horror movie, comedy, sci-fi scale, because I do think it's meant to be funny in a lot of ways, whether you think it is or not, that's fine. But I think a lot of it is intentional. Like, when he says, oh, he just wants his machete, I don't think that's funny, but I get that it's meant to be a joke. The whole, like, no human would act that way. What are you doing?
Right.
This doesn't make any sense, even in...
Well, but then they waste a bunch of time on, like, scenes that are obviously supposed to be tense, because it's like, okay, well, let's bring the soundtrack way down and have people creeping through dark corridors. And it's like, A, I don't care about this character in the slightest. And B, it's very obvious where this is going and what's going to happen at the end of it. So, like, why are you bothering with – why are they even trying to pretend that there's going to be any tension in this movie whatsoever? That's what I don't understand about that middle section.
I do think that it goes for comedy, but even then when you're going for laughs, you don't want to make it too arch because it still is supposed to be steeped in a horror world, I suppose. But there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's, you know, meant to be goofy. I mean, like, what is the Uber Jason thing? What is that? I don't get it.
He gets rebuilt by the nanobots or whatever that healed.
All right, so is the idea here, and I think it might be, is that, oh, whenever you think Jason's dead, he just rolls over and gets back up again, and this is now the space age version of once you think Jason's dead, he's going to jump back up and he's going to have a new silver helmet.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like, well, and of course the silver helmet makes no sense at all. Like why would, it doesn't even look like the mask that he was wearing before, which by the way, can we talk a little bit about the costumes in general? Jason's costume in particular looks like it was purchased at Spirit Halloween in all honesty.
Yeah.
And the rest of the costumes look like somebody raided a Hot Topic and mix and matched random things to stick people in.
Yeah. And it's weird that it's meant to look futuristic, but the costumes in this movie remind me of like Bachelor Party 1984. They're wearing the same clothes that they wore in the early 80s. This one goes back. I have a small amount of legitimate affection for this movie because it is so out there and wacky.
So I got one more science thing that I want to bring up.
Yep.
Which is also a film criticism thing.
Okay.
Which is the end of the movie. All right. So what happens is in the third act, they are screwed, right? They've destroyed the space station. They're apparently deep in space. and stranded, and the engines don't work, and then they try to get to the shuttle, and they can't get to the shuttle because Jason's in the way, and then I think the shuttle gets the scared girl steals the shuttle, and so now they have, you know, they're trapped on this ship in the middle of nowhere. So the whole premise of this third act is that they're deep, deep in space. They finally manage to contact somebody, and that person is going to take several hours to get there, but the ship is going to blow up before that person gets there, so they have to find some way to, like, get off the ship and get on another part of the ship and then separate it and whatever else. There's a whole rigmarole here, right, happening. The rescue ship arrives, they get on it, they blow up the real ship, and Jason, flies out of the ship, and it looks like he's going to come towards this rescue ship, and he gets taken down by the military guy.
Sergeant Brodsky.
Yeah. Sarge, as he's called. Like, literally the only name I could name in this movie was Sarge. So, and then they turn around, and there's a planet right there, a inhabited planet right there, which may very well be Earth. I don't know if it's Earth or if it's meant to be just another planet like Earth, but it's right there. And Jason, and he basically surfs Jason down through the atmosphere of this planet. It's like, wait a second, where the fuck did that planet just come from? They were just established for like the entire last half of the movie that they're in the middle of nowhere in space, can't possibly be rescued. And it turns out there's a planet right there.
Yeah.
That has people on it. See, again, that feels to me like the kind of thing where it's like, okay, wouldn't it be cool if we rode Jason down through an atmosphere and he became a shooting star, which is a kind of a neat idea. But rather than trying to figure out some way to, like, back work that into the plot somehow so that it made sense, they were just like, eh. And then the ship blows up and they turn around and there happens to be a habitable planet.
Right. Well, it's all because they want the tag of, oh, something just landed. Let's get to young lovers. Let's go check it out. And, you know, that's the tag that they wanted on the movie. And yeah, you're right. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but
it's like a planet just materializes out of nowhere. And oh, it turns out we were right by a planet all along.
I think that half of the movie is charmingly, enjoyably stupid. And the other half is just kind of dumb and inept. Like, just not what a good film, even a silly good film should be. But there is just enough energy and color and weirdness and funniness in this movie that I give it for entertainment value. I think Jason X is like a B- or a C plus. No, B- for, yeah. And for scientific intelligence, I'm going to go incomplete.
I've run out of funny things to do for scientific intelligence because, like, this is a Z, I think. As far as scientific intelligence goes, it's ridiculous and fine. Okay, it's not supposed to be scientifically intelligent. It gets a Z for any intelligence in my book. It gets a D- if I'm being generous in artistic entertainment value. I hope I never have to watch this movie again. So I'm never starting another podcast that would require me to watch it because I hoped the last time I saw it would be the last time I ever saw it.
Fair enough, but I'm pretty sure most people would agree with me that Jason X is Star Wars. In comparison to our next film, which is 1997's Leprechaun 4, In Space.
I am going to be one of the people that disagrees with you on this point. Because while this movie is also dumber than a bag of rocks at the bottom of a river, it at least feels like the writers and the director made a stab towards trying to have characters.
What?
Characters that have names, characters that are somewhat distinguishable from one another, and they're poorly written, and the dialogue is terrible, and the characters aren't good characters. But there's something, you know, about Dr. Mittenhand and, you know, the military guys, at least, you know, it feels like they're different military guys from one another. You got the guy with the shiny bald head thing, the Sarge of this movie.
Oh.
In contrast to Jason X, it's a segue into a plot synopsis for reasons that are never explained. The Leprechaun, who is, I will note, never once called the Leprechaun at any point in this entire movie. The word Leprechaun is never spoken. Instead, he's called the alien or the life form or the alien life form of some sort or another. Apparently, a Leprechaun is some sort of alien, and he has kidnapped a space princess in order to force her to marry him so that he can take over her father's kingdom.
And get some gold.
And get some gold. Well, no, so he can be even richer and he wants to be a king. So money is not enough for him anymore. For the first three movies, it was all about the gold. It was all about the Benjamins. Now he wants more than just money. He realizes that it has left his life empty and shallow, and he wants companionship, and he wants to be powerful and have a kingdom. So it's really sort of a very sweet coming-of-age story about a person who realizes that, you know, money is not everything.
All right. For those who know the franchise, Leprechaun 3 took place in Vegas. I think he got burnt up in a furnace at the end of part 3. And in part 4, he's just on a spaceship. That's it.
Maybe it's a prequel. Maybe this is how the leprechaun got to Earth.
I don't know. I think the joke is on me because I'm the person who's saying that he needed a scene that shows the leprechaun's ashes being resurrected and then shot into outer space for some kind of continuity level.
But you didn't need that for Jason.
But in Jason, at least they explained to you he got cryogenically frozen and then they...
No, in Jason, they don't... the opening scenes are him chained up in this empty room.
No, I'm saying that they at least explain how he gets into space. That's all.
Okay. Okay. Well, yes, but they don't... Okay. I mean, yeah. Fair enough. This movie, again, it never says the word leprechaun. It posits that the leprechaun is, in fact, an alien. And I'm okay with that. I can go with that. Why can't an alien look like Warwick Davis in Leprechaun?
Okay, but that's fine. But the whole kidnapped space princess thing is just out of, like, Empire Pictures 1983 stuff. It's like the Dungeon Master. It's like... If you just had the leprechaun in the military spaceship,
you could say it's classic.
If you just had that, like we're doing aliens, but with the leprechaun. Okay, but what is the point of this space princess subplot? It makes no sense. It's just it feels literally made up on the spot. It's just goofball.
He has to have a goal. I like the space princess. I think she becomes one of my favorite characters in the latter half of this movie.
To be fair, she does actually become one of the only interesting characters. It really does feel like, because people have been ripping off Alien and Aliens for the last 40 years, and this, I'm watching the first 25 minutes of it, and, you know, sci-fi horror combo is one of my favorites ever. I love that combo. And so I'm thinking this feels like a script that was just somebody wrote a standard Alien knockoff, and then they took that script and erased Alien and put Leprechaun in it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he barely ever does any leprechaun-y kind of things. He doesn't ever rhyme at any point, I don't think, that I can recall. Certainly not as much as he did in the previous installments. Again, they never call him a leprechaun, so you may very well be right that this was just kind of like, was this, so I guess my question is, you know, master of horror history, is this the first sequel in space? Is this the first, like, where they just decided we're out of ideas, let's just put this creature thing in space?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the first, but yeah, I mean, it predates Hellraiser Bloodline, right? And it predates, obviously, Jason X.
Yeah, so this might be the first. So it's a pioneer, really, when you think about it.
Actually, this came out the same year as Bloodline, so.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know. The parallel development.
All right, right. And you want to talk about, you know, creative kills and not using your space setting. Our first major dispatch in this movie is, if I'm not mistaken, the leprechaun takes the form of gonorrhea and jumps out of a guy's penis.
It's very similar in that way to Jason Goes to Hell, in that the leprechaun jumps out of. You think he's dead and his soul jumps from his body into the body of somebody else. Only in this case, rather than possessing the person, he explodes out of his crotch.
Boy. But again, you know, I can't say, it's not fair to say that Jason X is clearly made to be like a half or a third a comedy and then trash this movie for the same thing. You don't have...
I mean, this is 100% a comedy. I don't think there's any part of this movie that's not meant to be a comedy. In contrast to Jason X, which is two-thirds of a comedy and one-third of a really bad horror movie. Or just a very unsuspenseful suspense movie. This one just doesn't...
Right, but that's kind of the problem with this movie is that it's like, okay, wacky premise, leprechaun's in a spaceship and they're going to try and track him down. But then it becomes just very dreary and not fun. It just becomes very dull.
Let's talk about some things that are good in this.
Okay.
The princess's outfit.
Yes.
Who looks like Princess Leia decided to join the XFL football league.
Yep.
The leprechaun lightsaber early on in the movie.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, in terms of good things about this movie that I like over Jason X, like I said, it feels like there's more intentionality to it. It feels like there's a stab, albeit an incompetent stab, at trying to develop characters, at trying to, so the ship makes sense, right? Because the ship is this guy named Dr. Mittenhand, who's a mad scientist. He has hired these grunts to come on board his ship to help him capture this alien because he knows that he can use the alien's blood to do some sort of genetic engineering, something, something. And the alien, in the case, again, in this case being the leprechaun. So, like, it makes sense that everybody's there on that ship. Like,
listen to yourself. Listen.
It's true.
Listen to the words you're saying right now. All right. No. But I will give you this much. I will give you this much. In a lot of these movies, the evil boss would just be some, you know, glowering guy or girl with a clipboard. And what is it that makes this villain more interesting, Stephen?
Well, so A, his name is Dr. Mittenhand, which in and of itself I find funny in a dumb sort of way. He is a bald scientist with a terrible fake German accent who also happens to be a cyborg.
Yeah.
So the entire bottom of his half of his body is missing from like the chest down and he's been grafted onto a robot. And the entire first half of the movie, for what some reason, he teleconferences in and you think, okay, wait, is this a robot and that's a picture of a face or is that a guy actually like talking through the television to the people that are there, and it's not entirely clear until he literally midway through the movie pulls back the curtain, likens himself to the Wizard of Oz, and says, "Hey, I've been here on the ship all along." And why he's been hiding, I couldn't tell you.
This film comes from a very prolific Australian director named Brian Trenchard-Smith. And if you are a fan of enjoyable bad B-movies, he's done a ton of them. I'll just leave it at that. He's probably best known for a 1978 movie called Stunt Rock, but he has made a lot of fun bad movies and some that are just bad, and that's the you're going to have to figure out which ones for yourself. But so he is kind of like one of these kitchen sink B-movie guys who any criticisms about it would be like, yeah, I know. It's meant to be like a get baked and laugh at how silly it is movie. Like, that's what it is.
Well, Warwick Davis is on record saying that the reason why he likes this one is because Brian Trenchard-Smith understood that they were making a comedy and leaned into it. And
yeah, he directed part three as well. The series has had a whole bunch of different filmmakers attached, and Brian Trenchard-Smith directed three and four. And I think I had the problem with Leprechaun in Space that you had with Jason X, which is there's a handful of wacky moments, but there's a long stretch where it's like just kind of familiar B movie junk.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand. Again, it's not an easy movie to defend. It's only because I watched it after Jason X and saw, and it, for all of the stuff that it gets wrong, it got right the two or three things that I disliked most about Jason X, and so I was willing to sort of.
About the scientific intelligence behind Dr. Mittenhand's body makeup? Is that scientifically accurate?
Obviously it's futuristic. Again, once you're that far in the future, we're into magic territory, and I don't know. It could be.
Well,
it happened.
To be fair, Stephen, while Jason X takes place in 2445, I'm reluctant to tell you, Leprechaun in Space takes place in 2096.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that ever say that in the movie, or is that just a? I don't recall whether or not that's ever established in canon.
96.
That's like,
40 years from now?
80 years from now.
80 years? Got it. Yeah. Welcome to math versus science. Stephen, what can you tell us, because this, of course, is a movie about a leprechaun, what can you tell us about the scientific properties of gold that make it unique?
So gold, there was a reason why gold is money, or was for so long, is because for a very, very long time, gold was the heaviest thing that we knew of. And by heaviest, I mean densest. So it was the densest substance that people had access to, which means because it's incredibly dense, you can't adulterate it, you can't dilute it without making it less dense, which then becomes obvious, right? Because if it's less dense than gold than it's supposed to be, then it's not pure gold anymore. And so you can't fake gold.
Right, right. So it's like the end of the rainbow. Like there are some colors that you know, some colors combine and then some colors create like the lack of a color. Because it's
it's just because it's so dense, if you mix it with anything, it gets less dense.
Right. Any mixture to gold makes it less gold.
Right, exactly. And it makes it very obviously less gold because we didn't know of anything that was heavier than gold, and so we couldn't create. Now, it turns out there are some elements that are heavier than gold.
Like what?
Most of them are either highly radioactive elements that you can't create large amounts of, but I believe platinum is more dense than gold, which makes some sense when you think about the fact that platinum is also a thing that we use as money. Whereas gold also had the advantage of being sort of shiny and gold. And, it was a kind of thing that it's very easy to tell what's real gold and what's fake gold, which is really important when you're talking about money because you want to not be able to fake it. Because if you could just fake your money, if you can counterfeit it very easily, then it's not very valuable as money.
Right. Interesting. Also on the same vein, Stephen, why don't you explain to our listeners how rainbows work?
Rainbows are little droplets of water suspended in the air, act like prisms, like the cover of Dark Side of the Moon, and split the light into all of its component colors. And because of where you're standing, when you look up at the rainbow, different droplets of lights are sending different colors to your eye from slightly different places in the sky. And so it looks like this spread of colors in the sky. The light itself comes from the sun or possibly from the moon. I think you can make a moon rainbow, although it's difficult to see just because it's
dark.
Yeah, dark.
So what you're saying is that scientifically it has been proven that gold is found at the end of rainbows.
Yes.
Okay.
That is correct.
All right. There you go, everybody.
There are no rainbows in this movie, just to point out.
Well, no.
Because it's in space, no one can see your rainbow.
Yeah. I just was getting into the legends of leprechauns and the whole idea of—
Which, again, never really figures into this movie. So point of science, which is not really a point of science, but it's a point of logic. So they establish very early on in this opening scene with the leprechaun that he's capable of just sort of conjuring things from thin air. Right, he can make jewels appear in front of her to try to entice her. He can make boils appear on her face later on in the movie. He can use his magic to just sort of like do lots of things, right? But he spends most of the movie shooting at people with guns and hiding behind boxes in a cargo bay or whatever, like, and ducking out like he's Rambo and shooting a bunch of things and then ducking back behind it again. Like the only power he has is the power to use firearms, space firearms.
Space arms. Yeah. And again, it really does speak to the whole Leprechaun did it first. It took Jason 4 more years to go into outer space. And although I think Leprechaun 4 is mostly dull, I do give it credit for just being like the wacky premise, you know, like, all right, we're going into outer space. Like we've done the Midwest. We've taken him to Vegas. What else can we do to like entice a VHS rental? throw him in space. Why not? You know?
Well, I mean, it felt like the kind of thing, it's like the Sharknado of its day, where it's like you hear the premise and immediately you go, okay, we got to make that movie. Because however it turns out, it's so ridiculous just on a face level that people will be curious about it and they'll rent it for that alone. Now, the Leprechaun series, in contrast to the Friday the 13th series, was never scary. It was always a little tongue-in-cheek and goofy. You know, it's an inherently goofy premise, so.
Yeah, and the funny thing about Leprechaun, and to a different degree, maybe Child's Play, is that my niece was a little girl when the sequels were very common. And she would freak out when she'd see Leprechaun, like just the DVD cover. She would just freak out. And I'm thinking, oh, okay. Yeah. That's how this works, is a little kid will see the Leprechaun mask when they're like 8 or 9 and they freak out. And then when they're 16, they actually rent the movie and laugh their ass off. Like, I think that's the appeal of this franchise.
So let's talk about a couple science things in this movie.
Yes.
The first one that jumped out at me was the flesh-eating bacteria. So at one point, the leprechaun is hiding in this, I guess it's their waste disposal place or something. It's not entirely clear what this area of the ship is, but apparently it has flesh-eating bacteria in it because they have to go in wearing these suits, and the leprechaun at one point runs up behind a guy and pokes a hole in his suit, and the flesh-eating bacteria gets inside. And by the time his buddy carries him out of the room in about a minute and a half, it has completely stripped him to the bone, and he's a skeleton inside the suit. So there is a thing called flesh-eating bacteria. It takes months, earlier, at the very least days, depending on how bad of an infection you get, as it slowly eats your flesh away and you eventually die from something like organ failure or infection because your skin is the barrier to other germs getting into your body. Now, in fairness, though, this could be space flesh-eating bacteria.
That's true. Future, it could be
futuristic flesh-eating bacteria.
It could be Uber bacteria.
But why are they carrying this on the ship is really the question that I want to know.
As a weapon, of course.
Maybe. Who knows? Other point of science. At one point, she kicks the leprechaun in the balls, and it makes a clanging noise, which got me thinking, are his balls made out of gold? Like, does he have gold testicles? And if so, is that just him? Did he have his testicles replaced with gold testicles because he's so in love with money? Or do leprechauns sort of biologically have testicles made out of gold? And if so, can't they just create more gold by, you know, going into the bathroom and saying hi to their monster?
Oh, my God. That's a great question. Holy shit. We really got to get to the bottom of this. I really think, and this could be me just speculating, which it is, I think that comes from like a very old vaudeville shtick, which is if she walks out and kicks him in the balls, that's maybe funny. Maybe you missed the joke. Maybe it's not nailed. But if you add a real on-the-nose sound effect, then you're really selling that ball kick.
Well, clearly.
Yeah, that's it. I don't think there's any physical reason for that clang. I think it's literally like a 1930s vaudeville routine.
And then the other big point of science is, so late in the movie, the princess, for reasons that become clear only a few minutes later, decides to just take off her top and show her boobs to a bunch of guys and women for reasons that are completely mystifying in the moment and then are explained shortly thereafter by our resident scientist, who is aware of the fact that when Dvorkian or whatever she is, royalty, shows their boobs to you, it means a death sentence.
Yep.
I mean, was that literally just, they're like, oh crap, we're like 3/4 of the way through this movie and there have been no boobs. Yep. We need to show boobs.
Yep, there needs to be some bare breasts in this movie. And it almost, again, like Jason X, it almost feels like everyone in the room knows, oh yeah, we did this for purely exploitative reasons, and then we're going to have our characters explain it as if it makes sense. And it's not a great joke, but it's a joke. Yeah. I have nothing else to add about Leprechaun in Space. Right. I have no patience for this movie. I really don't like it.
In the latter half of the movie, it kind of really does go off the rails, in my opinion, in a good way. So the leprechaun stabs the scientist injects him with some sort of serum made from leprechaun juice and DNA from blah, 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 and turns Dr. Mittenhand into what he refers to himself as the mitten spider. He becomes this big, weird, gross thing.
Yeah, that I'll give you. That's kind of inspired. And again, that feels like a remnant from a slightly better, different horror sci-fi screenplay.
And then at the very end, they establish early on that there's this ray that can shrink things and grow things there on the ship.
Oh, right out of Land of the Lost.
They
man.
Shoot
God.
It at the leprechaun, and the leprechaun grows to be this giant leprechaun, which, you know, it's the opposite of a leprechaun. You know, a leprechaun is small, and he just
and then
this
wait,
giant
wait,
leprechaun.
Wait, wait. I think you just explained the joke. Leprechauns are normally small.
Yep.
And after he gets shot with the ray gun, he gets large.
He's a big leprechaun.
The incongruity to what's normal is what makes it funny.
Exactly.
Got it.
That and the like VHS level compositing of him into the scenes.
Well, do you want to, if you'd like, Stephen, we can, you can explain again to people how growing larger on a uniform scale would not work, how your bottom half would have to get doubly large.
Yeah, maybe it would work in space though.
Okay.
No, it wouldn't. It might work in space if you didn't have to, if there was no gravity, but there's obviously artificial gravity on this chip, so.
Aside from the fact that it gave the great Warwick Davis a paycheck and a bridge to yet another Leprechaun sequel, I am glad because Warwick Davis, who everybody will know from Star Wars and Willow and Time Bandits and lots of great stuff, he is a lovable, sweet guy, and I'm just glad that he did have this franchise throughout the 90s and whatever to keep him paid. Aside from that, there's Miguel Nunez Jr., who is one of the military guys who displays any personality, and he's a good character actor that you've probably
seen. He's got like 150 IMDb credits.
Yeah.
That dude's been in everything.
He is particularly good. And I will give the guy who played Dr. Mitten Spider a fair a shake, because he goes so far over the top that you got to give an actor the credit for that. So, but I think that Leprechaun in Space is a bad film. It's a bad B movie. It's not very much fun. I would give it a C for entertainment value, and I would give it an F minus for scientific intelligence.
Yeah, I would give it a C minus for entertainment value. I'll say this. If I had watched it first, I might have hated it more. The first time I ever saw this movie was with Doug Benson doing a movie interruption with the Master Pancake guys. And, a very enjoyable way to watch this movie. So it might be coloring my assessment of it a little bit. But C minus. And again, I think in fairness, I probably have to give it, what did I give Jason X? A Z? I'll give it a Z for, how did I not give Jason X an X?
Welcome to Overthinking It with Scott and Steven. Thank you for tuning in to our Halloween episode. Forgive us for going through two such silly movies, but we thought it would be fun, and it was. Next year, we'll maybe try and do slightly more serious sci-fi horror movies. Who knows? But we have some great episodes lined up soon, and we will see you back with another episode in 2 weeks.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, all, thanks for listening. We really hope you enjoyed Science vs. Fiction. Hey, Steven, you know what people can do if they want to support the show?
No, Scott, why don't you tell me what people can do if they want to support the show?
Well, there are several awesome things that you could do. Leave us a review at iTunes, or tweet about us, or Facebook about us, or email your mom and tell her that this is the best podcast ever. You could also sign up for our Patreon account, which will give you bonus episodes like commentaries, interviews, and random fun stuff for nerds. So thanks for listening.